I extend a hearty congratulations for his strong showing at the polls.
Former Attorney General Talis Kolberg is the new mayor of the Mat-Su Borough. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 10th of June. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new idea for an Arctic ambassador.
I think an Arctic ambassador that has the authority to make policy decisions and be at the same stature as the other nations, I think is critical for us.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
Senator Mark Begich is calling for the creation of a new government position, Ambassador for the Arctic. He also wants to see a regional citizens advisory council form to focus on Arctic issues. Begich made his proposals yesterday at a conference about the impact diminishing Arctic ice is having on naval and maritime operations. The U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland is hosting the event, designed to bring together naval and Coast Guard leaders, scientists, and policymakers. Begich says he wants to see a U.S. Arctic ambassador because other members of the International Arctic Council have ambassadors representing them at high-level meetings. He says the Obama administration and the Secretary of State are paying attention to the Arctic, but he wants to see a long-term commitment.
I do give credit to Secretary Clinton for raising the level because of her personal interest in Arctic policy, but what I want to see is a more sustainable level. And I think an Arctic ambassador that has the authority to make policy decisions and be at the same stature as the other nations, I think is critical for us to deal with Arctic policy in a broader perspective than just one issue.
Begich also wants to see a regional citizens advisory council made up of northern Alaskans. He says it can be modeled after the Prince William Sound Citizens Advisory Council, which was created in the aftermath of the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
I think in a sad way, we did it in Prince William Sound in a response to a tragic incident. In this case, we have a chance to learn from that experience and do it right.
Begich says the Northern RCAC would not be anti-development, but could give Northern Alaskans a voice in future oil and gas plans. He says he hears often from residents of places like Barrow that they need more of a presence at the table.
They don't feel like they're included in a lot of this discussion. And so this would ensure their long-term inclusion, but also give a working partnership with development that may occur there into the future. And they get to be part of that equation.
Begich is also asking for more funding in Arctic science and an increased investment in infrastructure like icebreakers and Coast Guard facilities. He's also calling for ratification of the Law of the Sea Treaty, which other senators, including Lisa Murkowski, also support. The third symposium on the impacts of an ice-diminishing Arctic on naval and maritime operations continues through tomorrow. Talis Kolberg will serve as Matanuska-Susitna Borough's mayor, at least until October. The former state attorney general received the most votes in yesterday's special borough election to fill the seat left vacant after former borough mayor Kurt Menard died earlier this year. The results are unofficial, pending a count of more than 1,000 absentee and question ballots. Borough Assembly member Lynn Woods is deputy mayor. She says she's looking forward to working with Kolberg.
I look forward to having him be a part of the effort to take care of residents' needs in the Mat-Su Borough and extend a hearty congratulations for his strong showing at the polls.
Tuesday's voter turnout was light, however. Only about 4,000 ballots were cast. Kohlberg garnered more than 2,500 votes, with second runner-up Bruce Walden receiving 772 votes. Kohlberg received 63% of the vote in a field of seven candidates. Borough rules require a candidate to receive more than 40% of the votes cast to avoid a runoff election. The borough election results will be certified at a special assembly meeting on June 23rd. Kohlberg will have to run for election again in October, when the regularly scheduled election occurs. A federal appeals court has sent the corruption cases of two former Alaska lawmakers back to a trial judge. Today, a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered the review for former House Speaker Pete Cott and former Representative Vic Coring. The panel said the trial judge could set conditions for immediate release of the two from prison. The Republican lawmakers were convicted of accepting money from Bill Allen, the former CEO of the now-defunct oilfield services company VECO. The money was tied to a scheme that would have helped the company benefit from legislation favoring a massive natural gas pipeline project. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder last week asked the appeals court to remand the cases and to release the former lawmakers. The Justice Department found that prosecutors improperly handled evidence in their 2007 trials on corruption charges. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Sitka man heads to Major League Baseball.
Matt's hard work got him, you know, to Washington State, and now his hard work has gotten him into the pros, you know? So that's the message we tell our kids.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve. Crane accidents are on the rise around the nation. Making sure that crane operators are properly trained and certified is crucial to minimizing accidents in Alaska. Equally important is ensuring that riggers and signal persons are adequately trained. More information is available at 1-800-656-4972. Good, safe jobs are Alaska's future. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
State health officials say there are now 11 confirmed cases of H1N1 influenza, the so-called swine flu, in Alaska. This number includes the first case in Anchorage. The 28-year-old Anchorage man reported feeling ill June 1st. He was given antiviral medication and was feeling better 3 days later. No one in his immediate family has reported any symptoms. Of Alaska's 11 cases, 8 are in the interior, 2 in southeast, and the 1 in Anchorage. There have been 4 other known cases of H1N1 on cruise ships traveling in Alaska waters, but those are not attributed to state totals. The State Department of Transportation has commissioned a study to see if road improvements can be made to ease the flow of traffic for a busy area of Anchorage. It's the growing medical and university campus area known as the UMed District. The proposal has come up in the past. The latest interest is drawing heat from concerned citizens who fear it would disrupt the natural balance of a relatively undeveloped area. APRN's Susanna Caldwell has this report.
Cars and motorcycles roar through the T-intersection of Elmore Road and UAA Drive. The roads currently stop in front of a heavily wooded wetlands area. A survey group is looking to see if a possible northern access route could be cut through and possibly connect Elmore to Brevard. It's one of several options that the state is having Dal HKM look at. Other ideas include expanding UAA Drive, remote parking with shuttles, finding a new route to connect Pine Street and a possible eastbound extension of 36th Avenue. Nestled between two major Anchorage roads, the UMed District is home to the University of Alaska Anchorage, Alaska Pacific University, and Providence Hospital. But it's also surrounded by wetlands and wooded areas that contain an oasis of popular trails. Mary Ellen Tuttle, Manager of Planning and Environmental Services for Dal HKM, says that the area is one of the densest and fastest-growing employment districts in the city. She says things have gotten better, but continued growth could present challenges.
There's been quite a bit of improvement in the last several years to improve the traffic flow from South Anchorage up into UMed, but there's still this problem of getting people from the north and from the east into UMed, and so that's what we're focusing on, and that We'll look at a range of alternatives.
She says that Dow plans to look at all alternatives and then present their findings, including non-motorized options. But still, Anchorage Citizens Coalition board member Michael Howard doesn't think that adding more roads is the answer.
It would change the character of that natural expanse and would disrupt important habitat in the way that the area functions. And the Anchorage Citizens Coalition is advocating for a transit solution and enhanced transit access as the area continues to grow. Yes, the area does need to continue to grow, but as it does, people should have choices about how they get there. Not everyone wants to drive and face parking problems, and especially just that character of the campus.
Howard said the state is looking at this like a plumbing problem. He says the state often explains that traffic works like water and that expansion is the best way to relieve congestion. Howard disagrees.
But we look at evidence through the last 50 years of building roads throughout the United States, and we see that it works quite the reverse, and that expanding road capacity increases the need and the convenience of driving and invariably attracts more traffic and exacerbates congestion problems rather than actually providing any sustainable solution to congestion.
So far, two community councils, University and Russian Jack Park, have passed motions opposing new access. Russian Jack Park Community Council President Ed Leach says that the council is concerned about the trails, but more concerned about safety. With several schools located in the area, it could pose a danger to school children.
The difficulty, though, is, and we're not opposed to that traffic going to the university. What we fear is the commuter traffic from South Anchorage using that route to get to the highway.
The area's state representative is Sharon Cisna. She does not currently support putting a road through.
We change things by putting highways through things. It's been documented to significantly change neighborhoods, for instance, when roads go through them. And I believe the same thing could happen with our University Medical District. I think it's one of the most valuable things in the state.
Bill Theobald works at the VA and rides his bike through UMed 4 times a week. Standing at the intersection of trails that could possibly be affected, he said he doesn't think another road is the answer.
Right now, it's not a problem. I think it can stop right here. But I know there's a lot of people that want it to go through, but I don't think it really needs to. We just don't have that much traffic. I don't know what it would improve.
Dow HKM plans to release the findings of its study in about a year and are currently taking public comment online. Tuttle of Dow HKM says they plan to attend community council meetings in the fall to present their findings. In Anchorage, I'm Susanna Caldwell.
The second half of pollock season, known as Pollock B, started today in the Bering Sea, and the fleet has more than 472,000 metric tons left to catch. KUCB's Ann Hillman asked about their expectations for the season.
This year's pollock quota is the lowest it's been in years, and so are some of the expectations for the B season. Some fishermen and processors think this season will be similar to last summer's, when the fishing was scratchy and the pollock hung out further north. Captain Jack Bronson of the Great Pacific says that makes the season more challenging.
Yeah, well, because when you were fishing close into town, you could leave the fish, be down, unload, and be back to that same fish within 24 hours. So you could kind of pick up what you'd left behind and be able to move forward with it. This time, it's like starting the season fresh again. Every time you go up there, you're, oh boy, we're back where we were 2.5 days ago. Are they going to be here? Do we got to go another, half a day up or part of a day up or go back the other way?
Bronson says traveling farther to get to the fish uses more fuel and requires them to bring back smaller loads so that the fish stay cooler and aren't as damaged during the long commute.
Real double-edged sword, you're trying to save as much money as you can because you have to go further than you ever have for the fish, get them as quick as you can there and get them back, yet you have to run harder to get back, which in turn turns into more fuel costs and things of that nature.
Alyeska Seafoods manager Sinclair Wilt says his fleet is fishing earlier this season, too, in order to avoid Chinook salmon bycatch.
Fish quality is much better later in the summer and in the fall, and we can extract greater value out of the fish if we harvested it then. But that also happens to be when the greatest Chinook salmon bycatch occurs. So To avoid Chinook bycatch in October, we're starting the season in June.
But Wilt says there's a cost. Pollock caught earlier in the season aren't worth as much.
The flesh hasn't filled out on the fish. The quality of the flesh isn't as good. We realize greater recovery in the later in the year. We get higher quality flesh, which produces higher quality surimi.
Wilt says fishermen get 2 to 3 cents more per pound for fish they catch in the fall, but they need to keep the salmon bycatch numbers down. So far this year, the Pollock fleet has caught 9,688 Chinook salmon. That's lower than in previous years, but still a concern. This year, king salmon stocks are so low in the Yukon River, even subsistence fishing will be limited. In April, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council voted to put a Chinook salmon bycatch hard cap on the Pollock fishery starting in 2011. Many in the Pollock fleet say they're working to curtail their bycatch now through salmon excluder devices on their nets and by avoiding hotspots they know to be filled with the fish. One Pollock fisherman, Randy Rothus, is a salmon fisherman too. He says he's not sure what else the Pollock fishery can do to help.
Well, as far as our fishery goes, I don't think so as much. I think there's probably a lot of other indicators that we don't know about what's going on with the Chinook and a lot of the other fish that we don't know. The oceans are pretty deep and pretty vast, and what's going on around the world, where those fish are going and how they can be intercepted in other places and other areas could also be a serious indicator that we don't even know about, and water temperatures and things like that, you know.
But his boat is leaving early, too, to avoid the salmon. He says he hopes they finish up the season quickly. But all of their hopes rely entirely on the fish. In Unalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by EcoTrust, working to encourage economic development, healthy communities, and healthy salmon in the Copper River watershed. On the web at ecotrust.org/copper river. The H1N1 swine flu has reached Alaska, and there are simple ways to avoid catching or spreading this or any virus. Wash your hands often with soap and water, or use a waterless hand cleaner. Cough into your sleeve or into a tissue rather than your hands, and stay home if you're sick. Contact your health care provider. More information is available on the state website at pandemicflu.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
A former Sitka baseball standout has been drafted into the majors. 2005 Sitka High graduate Matt Way was selected by the Philadelphia Phillies in the fifth round of the Major League draft yesterday. Way is a left-handed pitcher who just finished his senior year at Washington State University. From member station KCAW, Robert Woolsey reports.
Matt Way was selected in last year's Major League draft by the San Francisco Giants with a crop of young college pitchers, but that was the 37th round. This year, Way was among the top 200 players taken in the fifth round, which means he is being handed a real chance at a career in pro baseball. His dad, Jim Way, spoke to Matt after the announcement, but he was not the only person trying to reach the newest member of the Philadelphia Phillies.
He talked to me for a few minutes, and then other calls were coming in, and I don't know who was calling, but it could have been someone he needed to talk to or just a coach or a friend. I'm sure he's getting a bunch of calls, so he'll call me when he gets time.
Jim Way says it's likely his son will sign with the Phillies. He'll know more in a few days. If that's the case, Matt Way would head to Clearwater, Florida for the Phillies' extended spring training camp and then on to one of the Phillies' single-A clubs in Lakewood, New Jersey, or in Williamsport. Matt Way played ball last summer in a college league in Cape Cod. Jim Way says he and his wife Lisa are braced for more travel to the East Coast.
The Mariners couldn't have done me a favor and grabbed him, but that's okay. He'll get to hit now. That's kind of nice. He's in the National League, so he'll get to bat again.
Sitka baseball coach Ed Conway says the main difference between Matt Way, the 37th round draft pick, and Matt Way, the fifth round pick, is confidence. Conway says that growing up in Sitka, Way might have pitched in 30 games a year. In college, he competed against California pitchers with 120-game seasons. In the Cape Cod League, Conway says Matt learned that his Alaska experience was no disadvantage. A fresh arm and new confidence made him into one of the toughest left-handers in the Pac-10 this past season. Conway says Matt's success is no accident.
Through Matt's whole high school career, he was the hardest working kid.
and he showed everybody else how to do it. So now everybody knows, hey, look at, you know, Matt's hard work got him, you know, to Washington State, and now his hard work has gotten them into the pros, you know. So that's the message we tell our kids, you know. I mean, if you're going to work hard like Matt worked hard, look where it can get you.
Matt Way was 8-4 last season for Washington State University. He broke the left-hand single-season strikeout record held by current major leaguer John Olerud, and he went on to top the school's overall single-season strikeout record with 124. Coach Ed Conway says Matt Way did all this without anything in the way of real instruction in pitching.
You know, he had me and his dad helping him out here in high school, and then he went to a college program that isn't, you know, it's a Pac-10 school, but it isn't one of the elite. So he's going to get like professional coaching now, and it's going to be, you know, I'm really hoping that he can take off with it.
Conway believes that Matt Way could possibly move up to the Phillies AA team in Reading sometime this season. He says Way is 22 and older than many of the younger single-A players drafted out of high school, and Conway says he's a workhorse. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska State Troopers say two children were killed in a house fire today in Copper Center. Troopers identified the victims of the early morning fire as 9-year-old Jasmine Ewan and 6-year-old Elijah Ewan. They were staying with their aunt, Nellie Ewan, who escaped with her 3-year-old son through a rear bedroom window. Nellie Ewan was injured in the fire, and troopers say she was flown to an Anchorage hospital for treatment. The cause of the fire is under investigation. Copper Center is a community of 300 residents located just west of Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. A new method of processing livestock in remote locations will be headquartered in Kodiak, and a new meat product will arrive along with it. The co-owners and operators of the new multi-location abattoir, or slaughterhouse, believe the technology has the potential to boost the economic viability of ranching in coastal Alaska while addressing environmental concerns. KMXT's Eric Wander has the story.
Father and son ranchers Bob and Nathan Mudd, owners of Sitkanak Cattle Ranch and founders of Alaska Meat Company, unveiled the MLA to the public in Bell's Flats Thursday afternoon. The abattoir is a mobile meat processing facility made possible by a conservation innovation grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service. Nathan Mudd said Alaskan islands present numerous challenges to livestock ranchers because of their remoteness. He said the new facility, which consists of 4 28-foot fully mobile trailers, will help the Mudds meet the challenges of getting their product to market by bringing the processing facility to their cattle on Sitkanak Island.
It's a mobile facility that's designed to travel to remote places around Alaska, places that traditionally have been underserved or have not even had a way to harvest livestock. To have a facility that can go and make use of livestock that are currently just running wild on islands or remote places in Alaska.
Mudd said the line of meat products the facility will produce will come in handy for outdoorsmen, such as hunters, fishermen, and campers, but also for people who want to have something in their pantry in case of an emergency.
Start with, we're going to be producing steaks and stew meat that are all canned, so they'll all be fully cooked and pre-seasoned, and then also sausages. In the future, we may be looking into doing jerky and other products as well. And the reason that we went with these canned products and then sausage was so that we could have a product that's shelf-stable, that doesn't require cold storage, and by doing that, it makes it possible to be able to store it and transport it from remote places without high costs. And also the cost of the retailer that's selling the product and then the consumer storing it at their house.
Mudd explained how the MLA will fulfill the conservation requirements of the grant funding, including herd management and alleviating the often stressful process of transporting livestock.
There's herds, and Dad and I's herd is one that has just been running wild, and so to be able to go to remote places where there's been a lack of management historically, and to be able to manage those herds and to market the livestock that's out there, to assist in grazing management, and that's something that work with NRCS, and they provide technical assistance. Also, it's a low-stress option for slaughter. You know, to be able to take this out to the ranch or to the farm and slaughter out there, it decreases that amount of stress the animals have to go through. They don't have to travel on a boat to get to civilization. They don't have to lose weight, and it's a much nicer way to process animals and a lot better, a lot healthier for the animals. And consequently, it produces a better meat product.
Andy Schroeder is the district manager of the Kodiak Island Soil and Water Conservation District, which assisted the MUDs in applying for the Conservation Innovation Grant. He said the group's mission is to conserve the natural resources of Kodiak Island and that it has a direct relationship with agricultural producers in ensuring that their operations are sustainable and environmentally friendly.
Not just in Kodiak, but out the Aleutian chain and in various corners of Alaska, there are herds of hoofed animals that have been there for sometimes more than 100 years. And those herds nowadays, there may not be a viable way to manage those herds and to keep their numbers under control. So left unchecked, a herd like that could grow to the point where not only are they unhealthy for each other, but they're damaging the soil that they're grazing on, overgrazing and depleting vegetation, impacting the local water quality and salmon habitat. These herds need to be managed, and the abattoir provides an economically viable way for that to happen.
Schroeder said that the abattoir is the first of its kind in Alaska, and that the MUDs are potentially providing an example for ranchers and agricultural producers across the state.
Because of our great distances that you need to travel over water, because of the huge spatial difference between the herds themselves and the marketplace, the challenges that ranchers have here are like nowhere else in the country. And so this is the first processing facility of its kind in Alaska. Part of the conditions of the Conservation Innovation Grant are that they share their findings and the technology with others. Part of the reason the government's willing to support this kind of initiative, they want to encourage more of these to spring up. And I know that Nathan and Bob are looking for partners to run this one. I think that they're paving the way, possibly for others to follow.
The meat produced by the MUDs with the MLA will be USDA approved, shelf stable, and locally and organically raised and processed. They will have no additives such as antibiotics, hormones, steroids, or pesticides. MUD said the target date for having the products available in Kodiak is December 15th. The MUDs are still looking for retailers, but said Cost Savers has already agreed to sell their products, which will also be available for online orders at alaskameat.com. I'm Eric Wander.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman in Unalaska, Eric Wander in Kodiak, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Ellen Lockyer and Susanna Caldwell from Anchorage. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Want to break your tobacco addiction? Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-888-842-QUIT. Register for free Quit Line counseling and nicotine replacement patches. The combined counseling and patches increase your chances of quitting for good. Trained quit coaches will help you set a quit date and send you information. Free quit services are available to all Alaskans. This message is from the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.